a six-pack on the front seat, and a box of chicken wings. I'm dialing across the radio for a song that I can sing. Country girl that lived on down the road. You know, she almost had me turned around, but that was years ago. I'd better change my wandering ways. I know I've seen my better days. Always getting high when I get low.
Randy Travis here at Willie's Roadhouse with Storms of Life, which also happens to be the title of a great new book that came out this summer, written by our good friend Diane Diekman. Diane is a great author of country music, a great historian. She's written wonderful books on Fair and Young called Live Fast, Love Hard, Die Young, and the Marty Robbins book is amazing as well. Written a bunch of other stuff, too. She's been a longtime friend, and it's my honor and privilege to welcome her to our show here at Willie's Roadhouse. And Diane, I've got one question for you that I don't think I've ever asked you. How in the hell did a Navy captain from South Dakota become such an authority on country music?
Well, I grew up with country music long before I would ever have dreamed of being in the Navy. The first songs I remember were Johnny Cash and Marty Robbins, so that's what my parents liked. That's all I ever listened to. So when I went to college, it was in the rock and roll era, of course, but I only listened to country music. So I didn't have any music, any friends to enjoy music with.
Yeah, I feel your pain. I was country when country wasn't cool. And the lines were pretty well drawn back then. Either you liked rock and roll or you liked country, and the two didn't meet very often until you got into Leon Russell making the Hank Wilson's Back record, and the John Fogerty Blue Ridge Rangers album also helped make my life in high school a heck of a lot easier because it gave me some cred. Because they were big stars at the time in the rock and roll field, but lovers of country music.
Yeah, our age in the around late 60s, early 70s, you were rock and roll.
It wasn't an easy way to grow up, but I think it made us tougher, and we are validated now with our great taste in country music. Well, I got to know you through your great newsletter. Can you tell folks about that a little bit before we get into the books?
Sure. I publish a biweekly email newsletter. And it covers all country music, mostly classic country, the news that's going on. And I do a variety of things, like I went through the entire Country Music Hall of Fame and the Nashville Musicians Hall of Fame which took several years to talk about all those people. I started it back in 2005 when I was working on Farron Young's biography, and I was getting all these great little tidbits, and I was thinking like, well, you know, this is what Farron was doing 50 years ago this week. So that's why I started the newsletter, sending it out to about 40 people I knew, and that was one of my first headings, was in the life of Farron Young and what I was discovering about him, and this is where he was 42 years ago, those kinds of things, and it grew from there.
One thing led to another then.
Yep.
Well, I'm one of your loyal subscribers to this thing, and I have a confession to make. There's a lot of times when I click on that newsletter every other week that you do half of my show prep for me for my radio show, so I really appreciate it.
You're not the only DJ.
I owe you for that, I tell you. Well, let's talk a little bit about, you were talking about Farron Young. Let's talk a little about Live Fast, Love Hard, the Farron Young story. You said you did this in 2005? Came out in 2006 or 2007,
That's when I started my newsletter. I finished writing his biography in 2005 and found a publisher in 2005. And it was published in 2007.
Well, it was in that book that I got familiar with your writing style and immediately just was enamored by it. You picked one of those complex characters to write about in Farron Young anyway. And I love how you chronologically go through the events of the time period that you're referencing in the chapter. And then you do a really great job of bringing it all home and tying it all in. And I've noticed that in all your books. You're so good at that, and it makes for some great storytelling. And like we said, Farron was a complex character. Any surprises while writing that book?
Well, yes. The major thing was that he suffered from depression his entire life. Everybody thought he was such a cut-up, and when he died by suicide, people thought, well, that Farron is the last person they would ever expect that of, because he was such a happy, lucky, go-lucky guy. But that was a persona that he used to cover up his true feelings. So that was a surprise in that book. I learned a lot about suicide and depression while I was writing that book. And then I would go some of the interviews that people gave me and some of the things I found out. The signs were there for years that he suffered. I say he suffered from undiagnosed depression, because one of the signs of depression, especially in men, that they can't admit such a weakness or such a failing. And of course, Farron was that kind of show-offy big guy who could never admit to the weakness of feeling depressed. So some of the indications are alcoholism, violence, picking fights with other people, and it's all that he had to convince himself that he was a tough guy to overcome that.
It was a form of self-protection, I would imagine, because his home life when he was growing up was not ideal. There was violence in the household with his father. They butted heads continually, and I don't know for sure, was his father actually an alcoholic? Because a lot of that sometimes can be hereditary.
I never heard that his dad was an alcoholic, but he was abusive to the extent, he was emotionally abusive at least. Right. He wasn't there for his son. So just like alcoholics, Farron didn't have a loving dad image. His father was cold, and Farron felt unwanted.
Which makes it, you have to go prove yourself even farther to yourself.
Exactly.
Which is something that Farron was pretty darn good at, actually.
He was.
Farron, when he was drinking, was a handful, shall we say. But when he was sober, he was one of the kindest people, and he really cared about the folks he loved. He had that softer side that would almost make you put up with the bad behavior when he was roaring.
Yes, he did care about people. And there again, like you say, that he had to be this tough guy and this obnoxious guy. But he had all these different sides, that's for sure.
We're visiting with author Diane Diekman, talking about some of these great books she's written over the years, one on Farron Young, one on Marty Robbins, and the new one on the great Randy Travis. Tell you what, let's do. Let's listen to a little bit of Farron Young here at Willie's Roadhouse. We'll be right back with Diane in just a bit.
I want to live fast, love hard, die young, and leave a beautiful memory. I want to live fast, love hard, die young, and leave a beautiful memory. Don't want slow walking or sad singing, let them have a jubilee. I want to leave a lot of happy women, I'm thinking pretty thoughts of me. I want to live fast, love hard, die young, and leave a beautiful memory. I got a hot rod car and a cowboy suit, and I really do get around. I got a little black book, and the gals look cute, and I know the name of every spot in town. I want to find them, fool them, leave them, and let them do the same to me. I wanna live fast, love hard, die young, and leave a beautiful memory. A beautiful memory. I'm a whopper's cat, let me grab my hat, and baby, come along with me. We're gonna do some fancy stepping, we're really going on a spree. I wanna live fast, love hard, die young, and leave a beautiful memory. Now you may not approve of the things I do, but it really don't bother me. But don't ever think you can tie me down. I'm gonna stay foot loose and fancy free. So jump back, make crack, move out, and let the pretty gals in me. I wanna live fast, love hard, die young, and leave a beautiful memory.
Where musical memories come alive.
I just feed it a memory of you.
You're at Willie's Roadhouse on Sirius XM.
Back through the years, I'll go on.
My life, I'll tell about the night we met, and how my heart can't forget the way that you smiled at me. To know the story of my life, the moment when your lips met mine, and that first exciting time I held you close to me. The sorrow when our love was breaking up, the memory of a broken heart, then later. There's one thing left to do before my story's through. I've got to take you for my wife, so the story of my life can start and end with you. The sorrow when our love was breaking up, the memory of a broken heart, later on the joy of making up, never, never more to part. There's one thing left to do before my story's through. I've got to take you for my wife. So the story of my life can start and end. Can start and end. Can start and end with you.
Marty Robbins at Willie's Roadhouse. Dallas Wayne here, and if you just joined us, we are visiting with one of my favorite people and one of my favorite authors, Miss Diane Diekman. Well, after the success of the Fair and Young book, you kept going with the 20th Century Drifter, Life of Marty Robbins book. Tell us a little bit about that, because that was probably the most successful book you had, I think, probably out of the series of these three. Well, it's yet to be told what the Storms of Life's going to do.
My not golly, over yet.
Heck no! But very, very successful. 2013 Best Book on Country Music Award, which was quite an honor there from Belmont University and Mike Curb College of Entertainment and Music Business. That's some high cotton to walk around in, isn't it?
It is. I was pleased.
And another fascinating subject of country music. What led you to choose Marty Robbins for your second country music
album? I can remember exactly when I decided that, because it was in 2005. I was finishing Farron's biography, and I watched that Marty Robbins spotlight show, which I have seen not too long ago on YouTube. It keeps showing up, where Marty Robbins had George Jones and Farron Young as his guest on the show, and they were all singing. And as I watched that show, because I was watching it for Farron, of course, and I thought, Marty Robbins is such a talented singer, and he's also one of my favorite singers. And I asked myself the same questions that I'd ask about Farron. Would I ever get tired of listening to his music? No. Would I ever get tired of talking about him? No. And he hadn't had a biography written. And the aspects of his life that I look forward to researching, in addition to his country music, I knew he had been a combat sailor in World War II in the South Pacific, and I really wanted to research that. Mm-hmm. And then as a NASCAR driver, I wanted to research his NASCAR career. So those three things that decided me that I wanted to do his book next.
Well, you research these public figures in your books so thoroughly, much to the delight of the readers who pick them up. What was the main thing you took away as a researcher and an author on the life of Marty Robbins?
Marty Robbins was an extremely shy person, and it might seem strange to think of a cut-up and clown as he was, but that was how he controlled his shyness. Like Farron had his depression he had to hide, Marty Robbins was painfully shy. And even back in grade school, he would make up for that by becoming the class clown. And that's what he always did. When he was off by himself, he was by himself, and he was not a gregarious social person. Reporters sometimes had trouble talking to him, and they thought he wasn't very friendly, but it was his bashful side of him. He just wasn't that kind of person, but he covered it up by being always looking like he was on stage.
And in control.
Yeah.
Because he's the most self-possessed performer I've seen in a long time. He was really incredibly dynamic on stage and very engaging.
And he was a perfectionist. Everything had to be done correctly. And what I've always said, I enjoy comparing Marty and Farron, because there's a lot of similarities and a lot of contrast, but they both had this need for attention, and I think it went back to both of them, their fathers, that they wanted approval. They never got it from their fathers, and so I think they were looking for this approval and the attention. Marty's had to be positive. You know, he was in control, and everything had to look good and perfect around him. Whereas Farron, he wanted attention, and he didn't care whether it was good or bad. He just, when it came to showmanship, they were both extremely professional, but in his personal life, Farron just wanted attention. Bad attention is better than no attention at all.
Just like publicity, as they say. We're visiting with Diane Diekman at Willie's Roadhouse, talking all about these great books she's written on country music, and we'll be right back to talk more about the Randy Travis book, her latest, called Storms of Life, at Willie's Roadhouse with Dallas Wayne.